The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome to the Brad Sesmat Show. Alongside Haley Stasiak, I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for Brad here in this opening segment. We have a great show for you. Brad is going to talk to Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network, the Elite 11. He's a documentarian. This guy does just about everything, but they're going to break down all the storylines within the Pac-12. You have Michael Fabiano, also from the NFL Network. All your fantasy football questions are answered by the Hall of Famer Michael Fabiano, and of course, talk to the Lopes as well. So a lot to get to, but let's go ahead and talk about our news and notes that's brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And Haley, Diamondbacks are out of the race, but they are playing the Dodgers currently and still kind of want to play spoiler. They could make a big impact on the NL West between the Rockies and the Dodgers. Torey Lovello came out and said that he reached out to Bud Black and let him know they're going to try to give the Dodgers a fight. They did exactly that last night, winning 4-3 with a walk-off winner.
Yeah, on Monday night, they kind of switched up the lineup a little bit, and Lovello reached out to Bud Black and said, hey, I know this doesn't look like it typically looks, but I promise you that, yes, we are going to do everything. And Eduardo Escobar got that done on Tuesday night with that walk-off home run. I believe it was the first of his career. Now, Escobar is like a big Fogo de Chao fan. If you don't know what that is, it's a Brazilian steakhouse. So my first thought when I saw that was everyone like Fogo de Chao and Escobar, because that was clutch. And I mean, to get that done against the Dodgers when the Dodgers are fighting now, they're only a half game up on the Rockies there in the NL West. The Rockies solidified that wild card spot and they're inching closer to potentially an NL West title. And if the Diamondbacks can get that upset again on Wednesday night, then we'll see.
If they did go to Fogo, expect the Diamondbacks to move a little slower today against the Dodgers.
Those fried plantains there.
About everything there. That's true. Just get the meat sweats over there. Matt Cook got the start yesterday.
Yeah.
Went four innings, gave up one run. Hasn't started in a while, at least at the major league level. In terms of his future, potentially, let's look ahead to 2019. Where do you see him kind of falling into this mix of the rotation, the bullpen, AAA, big leagues?
I think it partially depends on if they bring back Patrick Corbin, who's a free agent here in the 2018 offseason, and then Shelby Miller's status as well. I mean, he's coming off of that re-injury, just that inflammation in the elbow that he's trying to get better from. He did say he felt like he rushed back, so maybe this time off that he's taken here in 2018 – getting that better in the offseason, spring training, getting to that point where he can come back in and be the Shelby Miller that we knew early in 2017. And we're hoping to get back when he came off of this injury, see what there is there. But I think he has a chance to make this starting lineup. It's just going to depend on a couple of those big factors.
Yeah, I could see him kind of being what Zach Godley was in 2016, kind of being that sixth guy. If there was an injury early in the year, he's able to get called up right away. He definitely has a shot to make this rotation, because you mentioned those guys. Taijuan Walker is also coming off of Tommy John surgery. Taijuan Walker, a great pitcher, but you just never really know how that goes.
Matt Cook was definitely more solid in those starts he made earlier in 2018 than Taijuan Walker was the previous year in those, because you never really knew. I feel like Matt Cook was a little bit more solid there.
And, you know, when you're looking at your 4 and 5 starter for the Diamondbacks the past couple of years, it's just been kind of the guy that can get 5 or 6 innings, you know, not looking to completely shut a team down, but, you know, keep them competitive. And Matt Cook did that and then some when he was in the starting rotation. But
Clay Buchholz is in that mix too.
Yeah, and Clay Buchholz is also a free agent. He also has an injury. We're still kind of uncertain. He's shut down for the year, but we're uncertain kind of the severity of that injury. So if you didn't see what I wrote, the novella I wrote on Sports 360 AZ about just questions swirling around the Diamondbacks, a lot of it had to do with the rotation because Patrick Corbin, I get the feeling he priced himself out of the Diamondbacks range, especially if they have Zach Greinke on the roster, if they want to extend Paul Goldschmidt.
Right.
AJ Pollock is also up for,
there's a lot of you know, them, there, 11
there's
of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of money that needs to go somewhere, and how are they going to divvy all of that up? I just don't know. And it's a very thin pitching market in the free agent this year. At least that's what is anticipated. So to have a really good lefty starter like Patrick Corbin, I have a feeling he might be on his way out. But we have plenty of time to discuss that. But Diamondbacks continue their series. Their last home game of the year is tonight against the Dodgers. Other news, the AAF Arizona team was announced yesterday.
The Arizona Hot Shots.
The Hot Shots. And we actually had that on the Brad Sesmet's Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona this week. A lot of really good stuff. I saw that some people thought this was a controversial name.
Which I don't understand completely.
Because obviously Hot Shots is in reference to the elite firefighters, specifically up north, you know, and if you are a native, if you've been around the state for a long time, you remember the 19 members of the Hot Shots who died in the Yarnell Hill fires. You know, first off, just it's incredible. It's already been 5 years. It feels like it was yesterday. As someone who
was right when I was moving into
to Arizona,
state.
Yeah. So I think that this is a great.
It's a tribute.
Yeah,
I think
a great
that's
tribute.
Part
that's
of
a good
the
word for
people
it.
Are looking at it more as. What it sounds like is like what like you're naming this out of a after a tragedy, but it's not necessarily
yeah,
that. I think it's more it's a tribute to that. It's a tribute to the people who have sacrificed their lives to kind of combat Arizona's nature, I guess.
Right.
You could
say. And I think this is a great opportunity for the Hot Shots to start a partnership to you know either promote it or supply resources
right.
Especially if this league really takes off, this could be a great opportunity for them to really help out that community. And you know, when you talk about you know, the people that live in Arizona, they take a lot of pride in the Hot Shots and that whole community. So that find that a little interesting, but it is the Arizona Hot Shots. So
that season's beginning in February 2019, right after the NFL season's
yeah.
done. They've got players kind of signed. That roster's taking shape. I think
Mike Bercovici will be out.
DJ Calhoun,
yeah,
they've
signed a couple of former ASU guys. So guys with local ties. So
and some Arizona former Arizona high school football players too that went off to other colleges and are now back too. So I think there's a lot to look forward with it.
Yeah. Other news, Clemson quarterback Kelly Bryant lost the starting job to Trevor Lawrence. Clemson
trending college football
was doing a kind of a, you know, two quarterback system where they were rotating in. Trevor Lawrence was one of the top, if not the top quarterback in last year's class. I saw him at the opening. He looked straight out of Switchfoot with the long flowing blonde hair, but this guy can sling the
you
ball.
You have an eye for good hair.
Kelly Bryant, in 2017, he led Clemson to the college football playoff. In 30 games, he threw for 4,300 yards, 32 touchdowns. Very good quarterback. Brad Sesmat put something out on Twitter that I found was pretty interesting, that ASU should take a look at Kelly Bryant.
I don't think it would hurt.
Because of the new rule with transfers and kind of redshirting in college, you can play four games and still get redshirted. He has played four games. So that means he wouldn't have to miss a year. And this was kind of a revolutionary rule. And the one who kind of started the ball to get this ball rolling was Blake Barnett, because he did that with Alabama. And he transferred to Arizona State. Didn't work out so much in Tempe, but you have Manny Wilkins graduating at the end of the season. This is his last year. Dylan Sterling Cole is currently the backup. And then you have a lot of youth behind him. I think it would be really smart for ASU, especially to get him in. If you could get him in early, get him in for spring ball, that could be a great opportunity. But again, this is a high profile quarterback. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of really good schools looking towards him. But just interesting the way that the quarterback position specifically has kind of changed.
I mean,
over.
We've seen it at Alabama too.
Like last 5 years, it seems like if you're not the guy, you're going to transfer.
I mean, you have to be able to go out there and get it done, and I think that's kind of been something that we've seen around college football. Even Notre Dame they've got a young quarterback that's stepped up too. So it's interesting to see that trend in college football, not just with, I mean, we're seeing these big profile schools, Alabama, Clemson, like these are big schools that are having these young guys step up right away. And I think it's good on one end, but it's also tough because in this case with Kelly Bryant, I'm sure that seniority factor, like I've kind of come in and I've done the work, I put in the work and he's getting this, I can see where that mentality might be.
And he's a little bit different of a situation. He's not like a one and done transfer. Right. He waited behind Deshaun Watson to get his turn. He did very good.
It's like for paying Clemson, your dues and then.
But the way that quarterback recruiting comes in, and with the quarterback position, as we track recruiting, so much of it is about timing. Mm-hmm. So many of these guys are looking, okay, who's a junior right now that's tearing it up, and then it's going to be an open position battle. Maybe I get a redshirt year, and then I'm stepping in as a sophomore. That's what a lot of these quarterbacks are trying to think about and you know, get those 2 or 3 years at the college football level. So a lot of interesting stuff swirling around the football season, and with the AAF now, there's not really going to be a true off season. So as you have seen with us, with Brad Sesmet's Football AZ, we do a show just about every week. There's a reason for that, because it is now a year-round sport. So a lot of really interesting stuff swirling around right now. Coming up next, we have Brad Sesmet with Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network. That's next on the Brad Sesmet Show.
Now let's do a deeper dive on the Pac-12 conference. And so far here in the South, looking at Arizona State and Arizona a month into the season, Yogi Roth with the Pac-12 Network. As always, good to have Yogi Skype on in. He was in Washington over the weekend for the ASU UW game. What do you make out of the Sun Devils? Let's just start there. A month into the Herm Edwards reign, you saw them the other night. What do you make out of what's going on here in Tempe, Yogi?
I think you have to be impressed, you know, and I remember coming there in spring and talking to you about it in the off season. The plan that they have, I always really liked, you know, and it's this quote unquote new model. And a lot of people poked fun at it or wondered, like, what could it really be? And what it is that Coach Herm Edwards is the true CEO of this program and setting the tempo, the style of play, and allowing his play callers and his players to do what they're tasked to do. And everybody obviously having their own individual expertise and expectation. And what I like about it is they haven't wavered when it's gotten hard or when a big-time opponent showed up like a week ago against UW. So overall, really impressed. I like how they are looking at each game like it's an NFL game. I say that because I spent the week at UW and visited with the Seahawks prior to the UW-ASU game. And every NFL game, when you turn it on, the goal is to get to the end of the game and give yourself a chance to win it. And you look at them in this game, and they weren't up-tempo. They weren't trying to throw the ball over. There's an argument around that, I'm sure, that people have had around N'Keal Harry and his touches. But the game plan, if you ask anyone at ASU or any alum or any fan or anyone on in the program, if it's a one-possession game late, would we take it regardless of style of play? They'd say yes. So to me, I've been impressed.
You know, in N'Keal Harry's case, he did look frustrated the other night, but don't the great ones want the ball? And there's a balance of, I'm not going to embarrass my teammate, but I am going to let him know, hey, get the ball to me. Is there a fine line, or did he cross it the other night? There's been that conversation.
Look, I mean, I think, you know, I played the receiver position. I love that position. I think he's an impressive guy. And you talk to coaches over the years there, whether it was Todd Graham or now, and remember Rob Likens was there with him and the previous staff, coaching receivers, and now obviously Rob now is the OC. And there's always growth for every young player, and there's always growth in huge games and big moments. And there's always growth when you understand, like, wow, every camera's on me now, every moment of a possession, even when I'm on the sideline, just looking at my body language, and is it championship worthy? And I didn't have a problem with it, to be honest with you, to answer your question. I think that this is a young man who is really committed to the craft. He's clearly one of the most elite. And to your point, you want the ball.
Yeah.
Now, UW doesn't make it easy. Now, they didn't double him every single snap and went back and watched the game. But on critical downs and distances, they made sure they knew where he was. I mean, so much so they're calling him out every single snap on the defensive side, screaming where he is, rotating coverages towards him, and making sure he wasn't going to beat them in critical D&Ds. So, yes, frustrated. Yes, it's fair. Is there a fine line? For sure. Will he learn from it? No doubt. But I don't think a coach is ever going to be frustrated when somebody wants the ball, because I didn't think it was up in a coach's face. Right? We've seen that in the NFL. We've seen that at other games and other levels. So I didn't have a problem with it.
Yogi Roth with us, Pac-12 Network. Flip it over to U of A. I was at their game against BYU. They got pushed around. A lot of criticism directed towards the defensive side of the football. Their response is, look, It's an up-tempo Chip Kelly type of offense. If the offense can't be on the field, we're not going to get it done. Have they figured it out here a month into the season, from your view?
No, I don't think they figured it out. I think, you know, for the next couple of weeks, it's still a work in progress. I think what we've seen every week is they've gained knowledge of who their team is. You know, I mean, a huge question that is asked in five campuses with the five new head coaches in the Pac-12 conference since the day they got the job, till spring ball, training camp, and now is personnel questions, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the response is, I don't really know, to the reporter or to the question, because these coaches, we forget, they're still learning who their players are. There's no three preseason games where you get to evaluate. You're only scrimmaging two, maybe three times all of training camp. And a lot of times the last one's a lighter scrimmage, and it's just understanding the, how a game works. And it's a quote-unquote mock game type of environment. So you've really only had three, or in their case, four games to learn who your personnel is. And a huge part of that is learning who the catalyst of your offense is in Khalil Tate. Week one, clearly he was a drop-back passer and didn't connect down the field. Week two, they're going to run him more and gets banged up on the first drive of the game against Houston. Week three, I thought it was a nice combination of the run, pass option, zone read stuff against an incredibly lesser opponent. What do we see against Oregon State? Well, I think we saw an element of this offense, which is exactly what they want to do, which is the threat of Khalil in the zone read game was slowing down the linebackers of Oregon State so much so that J.J. Taylor and company got off. And that's the style of play in which I think they're going to continue to develop and evolve. The challenge for them is they need to develop and evolve quick, because the Trojans are coming to town in a game that I think we would probably agree we thought both teams, or at least Arizona, would be undefeated coming into this ball game. They're not, but they got a little confidence, got a couple wins in a row. The place will be electric because it's SC, because of what the time of the game is. It'll be interesting to see if they can play against, you know, one of the upper echelon teams skill-wise and move the ball. It won't be easy. They did it a year ago, but clearly a different style of play within this system.
It's interesting, Yogi, because here we are a month into the season, and I can't look at the Pac-12 South and say this team and this team are clearly above everybody else, head and shoulders. That may be I'm sitting here in Arizona seeing these two teams every week, or it just may be the Pac-12 South hasn't quite figured itself out. What's your view of what's going on here, and could either one of these teams be fighting at the end of this season for a conference side championship?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, right now, just because of the nature of the amount of conference games teams have played, everybody's in it. Mm-hmm. Then you look at the style of play, and everybody's in it, to your point. And I think when I look at every team, and I always look at unforced errors as a huge stat that I track calling games, what teams are killing themselves? And everybody has an issue, and that's fine. Every team around the country probably has an issue right now. I mean, Clemson just names a new starting quarterback a couple weeks into the season. So everybody has their things that they're working on and developing. Here we are at SC, and they're still developing their quarterback and their offensive approach and philosophy. And defensively, they haven't been as consistent as they want. You know, a lot of missed tackles a week ago against Wazoo. You can go down the line pretty much everywhere other than UCLA, which is, in my opinion, a complete rebuild. Everybody has their issue. Talked about Arizona, Arizona State. They all have the things that you can look at. Utah, I'm calling their game this weekend. It's drops from the receiver position. So those are the things that when they get into these conference games, where can they minimize those unforced errors that have shown up a lot? Missed tackles, drop passes, poor penalties at the line of scrimmage we've seen with teams throughout the season like Stanford early on. They had too many false starts, so they got going, settled into that, obviously, in an incredible victory against Oregon. So answer your question, I'd say Colorado is the most consistent team right now. Really haven't had a lot of unforced errors. Looking for them, they'll get, you know, they should get another win at home at Folsom on Friday night against UCLA, and then away they go. So to me, it'll be these games like SC, Arizona, Arizona State. You know, you look as their conference schedule continues to unfold, they can't lose these tight games and games you'd think they should be must wins. Arizona State against an Oregon State team this weekend, because I think it'll be that close as we get into November among all these teams, and some of the head-to-heads will prove to be pivotal.
As always, appreciate your time and your insight, Yogi. Thanks.
You got it, man. Anytime.
There's Yogi Roth there, Pac-12 Network, Skyping on in, inside and out the Pac-12 so far this season. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Time now, as we do every week, with the NFL Network and NFL.com. It is Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, right there at the NFL Network, all things fantasy football. Now, you are getting overrun with Jameis Winston. You are getting overrun with Ryan Fitzpatrick. You're probably getting overrun with Le'Veon Bell. I'm just going to throw you a softball, Michael. To start with on today, what is the biggest move you think needs to happen today on the waiver wire? Let's start waiver wire.
Picking up Calvin Ridley, who's available in a lot of leagues. There's actually a handful of really good wide receivers who could be available in your league, including Mike Williams, including Tyler Boyd. But Calvin Ridley, with four touchdowns in his last two games, three touchdowns this past week, the top rookie wide receiver we sort of projected to be DJ Moore. Mm-hmm. So far, it's been Calvin Ridley. And in that offense, which is clicking on all cylinders, going up against the Bengals this week, which that could be a shootout there in Atlanta, he is the number one pickup off the waiver wire this week.
Okay, let's talk strategy then, because I'm getting bombarded with questions. What do you do with Ryan Fitzpatrick after last night?
Well, he's got the Bears in week four, so I bench him. And I get it. I mean, the numbers he's putting up are ridiculous, mm-hmm. although a lot of us were ready to bury him in the first half of that game against the Steelers because he was throwing picks left and right. But came back, 25 fantasy points, 400-plus passing yards in three straight games. That's an NFL record. So I just don't like the matchup. Road game, Bears defense is fired up, Khalil Mack. I would fade Fitzpatrick this week. And then Tampa Bay's got a bye, which means could Jameis Winston return after that? We shall see.
Is it that easy a call for you on this one? I mean, I'm torn. I'm sitting there with a waiver pick this week saying, because of what you just laid out, I could go get Jameis this week and just sit him for a couple of weeks and I'd be just fine. I just lost Garoppolo. I got to find a quarterback, Michael.
Well, there's some options out there because look at the rookies. Baker Mayfield's available in most leagues. So is Josh Rosen. So is Josh Allen. I do believe that Winston will get the job back sooner rather than later. I mean, if you look at what Fitzpatrick has done, it's great. He played the Saints in week one. Their defense is trash, and we all thought it was going to be good, and it's not. He played the Steelers on Monday night. Let's be honest. Their defense is trash. It's not good. The only good defense he's faced is Philadelphia, and he did well against them, but the Eagles typically are better on their home field than they are on the road. So, I mean, it's lined up for Fitzpatrick to put up big numbers. Let's see if he can do it in Chicago. If he can do it against the Bears, then maybe we're talking about something. But I would be afraid to start him in week four.
Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer at the NFL Network, NFL.com. He joins us every week here with Brad Sussmat. Le'Veon Bell, latest. How far do you go on this one? You and I go back on James Conner. I picked him up. I'm looking pretty good. Where are you at on Le'Veon Bell now?
Dude, you can't do anything but just wait. You can't drop him. I wouldn't drop him. If someone in my league dropped him, I'd pick him up in a second. But we've heard some rumors that potentially a trade could be in the works. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the best-case scenario because I truly believe that he's not coming back until the second half of the season. And he's going to save his free agent status for 2019 by coming back late. And then at that point, what are you getting? He hadn't played football in a while. He's doing a lot of social media at this point. He's not doing much in terms of football. So it's a bad situation all around, and the best-case scenario for fantasy fans, especially for those of us who have Bell and Connor, is that he's traded, and then you get two running backs, and one of them is elite. And there's been talk about maybe the Jets. I would love to see him go to the Colts. I think that would be a great fit for him. Mm-hmm. Don't think it's going to happen. Who knows? But that would be my fantasy preference. But there's really nothing you could do right now with Le'Veon Bell. You just sit and wait, and unfortunately that probably is going to be a long-term absence when it comes to Le'Veon Bell and your fantasy team.
Michael, my mailbag's been overflowing with David Johnson being used incorrectly out here in Arizona. The other day,
do you know Mike McCoy? Can you please talk to him?
Yeah, yeah.
Do something, Brad.
I know. It's ridiculous. It's 32.
People are going nuts.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I know. And then there was talk that he was being talked to by a coach because he missed a blocking assignment. David freaking Johnson, man, I don't understand what the deal is. And last week was very, very depressing for me having David Johnson on one of my teams and for fantasy fans everywhere. It wasn't even a game script issue. The Cardinals were ahead in the game. It was close throughout the entire game, and he still didn't get enough touches. I don't get it. So maybe now that Josh is going to be the quarterback, potentially He's a smart kid. He'll lean on David Johnson. He'll give him some opportunities as a pass catcher. Maybe Mike McCulver start to give him some opportunities out of the slot as a pass catcher. This dude can do it all. And honestly, like, statistically, they're kind of neutering him, and I don't get it because he's the best player they have on their team on the offensive side of the board, you know, except for Larry Fitzgerald, and Larry's not 100% right now.
But are you at a point, Michael, where I'm getting a lot of questions saying, hey, ask the Hall of Famer. He's sitting there at the NFL Network of it's time to trade David Johnson. Mike McCoy's not going anywhere. Are you at that point from a fantasy standpoint?
What are you going to get for him? Like, anyone who makes a trade offer to you is trying to buy low.
Right.
And you took DJ probably top five pick. I don't imagine someone would give you fair market value for David Johnson right now. And if you did get it, like, if someone offered me, I don't know, Christian McCaffrey or Saquon Barkley, I would do it in a second.
Mm-hmm.
But people are not going to offer you Christian McCaffrey or Saquon Barkley. They're going to lowball you. You're still going to start getting Isaiah Crowell offers. So at this point, you can see what's out there in terms of a trade. I wouldn't expect that you'd get much for him right now, at least not what you should be getting for David Johnson.
A couple other questions. We'll let him go. Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network, NFL.com, is with us every week. Ravens backfield, getting a lot of questions. Collins, Buck Allen, what do you see there in Baltimore?
Confusion. I mean, Buck Allen has been the goal line back. He's actually scored four touchdowns already this season. He's been the better fantasy back. Alex Collins actually got sort of off the schneid last week, got into the end zone, but it's a committee. It's not what we expected. It's a committee, and Allen is the goal line back, and that's hurting Alex Collins' value. So this is a situation where Collins is a flex at this point, and I think Buck Allen, to a degree, is a touchdown-dependent flex.
Mm-hmm. All right. Situations you're looking at this week that need to be cleared up that are off the top of your head this week?
Oh, man. Do we have like 20 minutes? I mean, let's start in the Green Bay backfield. What the hell's going on there?
Yeah.
Right, Aaron Jones comes back, and he is the better back when you compare him to Jamal Williams. Ty Montgomery is going to be the pass-catching back.
Mm-hmm.
But we have no idea what's going on there, and it's too bad because there's a great matchup ahead against Buffalo. But can you start Aaron Jones or Jamal Williams with any kind of confidence this week? Because you don't know what the snap percentage is going to be. You don't know what the touch share is going to be. So that's a situation to watch. Royce Freeman, well, he did the job against the Ravens last week, but Philip Lindsay was kicked out of the game for throwing punches. And I want to know, well, is Freeman going to end up seeing more touches now moving forward against the Chiefs, which is a great matchup? That's something that I want to watch. I want to watch how these rookie quarterbacks play, too, like Baker Mayfield. I mean, highest-rated NFL Network game ever, and it was Jets-Browns. You know why?
Right, right.
Baker Mayfield.
Yep.
I want to see how Josh does under center for the Cardinals. And, you know, tough matchup against Seattle. We'll see. I want to see what Josh Allen has. 27 fantasy points last week in Minnesota against that defense. What can he do against the Green Bay Packers? And the Colts' backfield, which to me is an absolute mess. Marlon Mack's been banged up. If he comes back, is he the guy? I don't know if he's going to be the guy. At this point, it's seeming like a three-headed backfield monster. But there's still a lot of backfields out there that have a lot of questions that have been left unanswered. And I'd like to see some answers this week, especially in that Green Bay backfield. Because if Aaron Jones ever gets a chance to be more of a featured back, at least the guy that's getting the majority of the touches, I think he could end up being a very nice asset for fantasy fans. But I don't know if Mike McCarthy's going to go there.
All right, before you get out of here, I've got the Arizona Hotshots in studio. You know, we've got the Alliance of American Football coming in February. Michael,
mm-hmm.
Michael, are you going to do any fantasy in February, March, and April, or is this where you're going to decompress? Because I hear they're going to have fantasy all over the place. I'm just curious,
so,
Michael.
So I'm going to be doing, I have my 10 football leagues. I might do a basketball league. I haven't done a basketball league in years.
You
but
have
I might
10
do
fantasy
get
teams?
People together.
You have 10
and
fantasy teams
nothing.
Right now.
Yeah, but Brad, that's nothing.
That's nothing?
If you there are guys in the industry who I'm friends with who are in 30-plus.
30
and
leagues.
And you're talking about redraft and DFS and best ball. Like, it's unreal. So 10 is a lot.
Yeah.
But in my industry, it's actually on the low side because a lot of my buddies out there are in, you know, 20, 30 leagues. I could never do that. Heck, 10 is enough for me at this point. But, yeah, I might do some basketball, and then I pick up baseball. I don't know what's going on with – I think the XFL might have fantasy football, and that doesn't come out for a couple of years, but maybe I'll do some XFL fantasy football. We'll see what happens. But baseball and football, for me, my friend, sometimes I need a little bit of time to decompress from the football season.
I got you. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time, as always, right there at the NFL Network. Thanks, Michael.
See you, pal.
Take care. It's Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, NFL.com, NFL Network, Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University Athletics. A couple weeks back, I was in President Brian Mueller's office, and he was just raving about golf, raving about the ladies' side, Lauren Gasecki, the job that was done last season, the coach of the year, the WAC championship, and then over on the men's side, too, there's a lot going on with GCU and golf. A great course has been put together the last couple of years, so it's good to have Coach Gasecki with us, GCU Women's Golf. They start the fall season here next week. How are you, Coach?
Hey, I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing great. Doing great, Lauren. Thanks for coming on board with us. Let's just look ahead a little bit here. You start next week with the fall season. How do you feel about this year's team?
I feel pretty good. Just really excited to get the season going. The first tournament always kind of brings a little bit of nerves and, excitement and all that kind of stuff. But I'm feeling pretty good. We got a young team, but we also have a lot of those returners from that championship team coming back. So, looking forward to it.
It's your fourth season, correct?
It is, yes.
And in 4 years, if I would have told you when you first started that you're going to get a championship and you're going to get Coach of the Year before you even get to year five, I'm sure you'd have taken that, but were you surprised with last year's success?
I would have been very surprised probably in the fall, but the spring, we had some really good team bonding moments. The girls that we had really came together, and it was just awesome. There was a change with our team. And then all of a sudden, everybody just came together. They knew what they wanted. They got it done. And, after we won our final regular season tournament, I would have been very surprised if we didn't win conference. So it was kind of a crazy year. But, that team, they were pretty special last year, so it was fun.
When you talk about bonding, if you could deeper dive on that for the audience, because they may just think, well, wait a second, you're just out on a golf course. What do you mean team bonding and how does that work? You ended up being the first team at GCU to qualify for an NCAA tournament, correct? It was the women's golf team.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. But if you could drill down on that as to what the bonding was like for the audience.
Yeah, so we did a lot of team activities together, just a lot of things to help everybody just open up. Because everybody on this team is very, very different. But they all are here for one goal, and it's to win championships and obviously do well in the classroom. But, just having those activities, having them over at my place, just having a cookout, having a pool day, just to see their personalities come out. And then they just grew closer as a team. They did a lot of fun stuff together, dinners and that kind of stuff. But mainly just getting them together, having their personalities come out so we can learn a little bit more about them. They can learn more about us. And it does take some time, especially when you have some new people that come in. And, we just wanted to get to know each other, and we did. And like I said, everybody just kind of came together, and we knew what we wanted and got it done.
How different is it then coming into a season where now you've had success? You've accomplished quite a bit, but you've also had individual accomplishments. You've had a WAC Player of the Year now. And the bonding, is it different now that there has been a taste of success coming into this season?
It is a little bit, just because that team last year, we have 4 or 5 of those girls coming back. Mm-hmm. So they've already set the tone for the newcomers. So they know what it takes to win a championship. So that bonding happens quicker, and it's going to happen faster. Already our 2 freshmen have come in, and, they're great. They're awesome. They're already in the mix for a lot of that kind of stuff already. So it's just happening quicker, I would say. And, you know, those returners, they're setting the tone. They know the culture that we want. And, you know, they've helped a lot.
You talk about your incoming, and I just, in getting ready for this interview, noticed Pocatello, Idaho, and the Netherlands. So, the travel budget was a little different for each one of those, I'm sure. And in all seriousness, how did you find the two incoming players, and why don't you talk about them a little bit?
Yeah, so Peyton, she's the one from Idaho. I've been talking to her I've known her for probably 2 or 3 years now. Mm-hmm. I found her and kind of just worked out perfectly, and we've been talking for a while, and she just loved everything about GCU. She's been to visit multiple times, and so she's seen the change at GCU and has loved where it's going, loved where this program's going, and she's just a sweetheart. Coming from Idaho, you know, I know her very well, but she just loves the team, loves everybody on it, and you know, she's just really happy to be here. But she's also very, very talented, state champion multiple times. Mm. So she's been up there. She knows what it's like to win championships. So, you know, she's going to help us. And then Kaylee, she's from the Netherlands. She's come in, already made, you know, some waves on the team. She'll be traveling to our first tournament as our number two player. So she came in. You know, shot some really great scores during qualifying, and, you know, she's very, very competitive, just loves the game, loves the team, loves being here. So, you know, having both of them, they offered very different things, but they're both very talented golfers, so it should be pretty fun.
How does that work when you're building a recruiting class? You know, a lot of sports will take 5 players, 10 players, and in golf, it's a couple. How do you pare it down, I guess, is the question.
It's very different, like you said. It's, you know, we'll start off probably with 10 that we're, you know, very interested in. Mm-hmm. And then we just kind of have to figure out which ones fit best with our team, if we would fit best for them, you know, everything. Get to know their families, get to know them, watch them play golf if they play another sport. You know, I'll try to keep up with that sport, things like that. Just little personality traits and just making sure they fit with where we're going. And, you know, I like only bringing in 1 or 2 a year.
Sure.
That makes it easier. And, you know, I really get to know the girls. And I'm sure other coaches get to know their players very well, too. But I just like having that, you know, smaller team. Keeps us closer.
Lauren, you said something interesting there, and that is, they play golf, you watch them play golf, but if they play other sports, there are coaches that don't want to see kids play other sports. And I'm curious your reasoning or view of, and it sounds like you encourage them to perhaps play other sports. I think it's great when kids are well-rounded and it gives them an escape. I recommend a lot of athletes go take up golf. You'll take it with you the rest of your life, and you'll go clear your head. Yeah. Golfers I've never sat with and said, hey, go take up water polo or go take up swimmer, you know, whatever the sport may be. Tell me your reasoning behind seeing if they play other sports and how that factors in for you.
Yeah, I mean, exactly what you just said. And also it adds that team aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So golf is a very individual sport. But if they play a different sport like basketball or soccer or something else like that, you know, you see a totally different side of them. They're with their teammates. They're, you know, in a quick, fast-paced game. So you kind of see how they react. You know, a lot of eye-hand coordination kind of stuff as well. But just mainly that team aspect and, you know, can they get along with the team? How do they react with teammates? Stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, golfers are athletes. So, you know, I think it's very common for golfers to play a lot of other sports. I think every single person on my team has played a different sport. And I think that helps with the culture.
That's cool. And we're not going to get into the debate about golfers being athletes or not, because I'm on your side on that. I hate that. When you have a defending WAC champion, how do you go about motivating that person, and what do you want them to improve upon? Because every player can improve, obviously. You have a defending WAC champion. Right. Let's talk about that a little bit.
We do. It's nice because Siri does that on her own. You know, obviously we're going to encourage her and keep pushing her because she can get a lot better. But, you know, Siri came back and sat in my chair and was just like, hey, last year was awesome. You know, I'm very excited to get this year started, but I've forgotten it. I have a lot more I need to accomplish. I want to be player of the year, you know, get to regionals, make it out of regionals, get to nationals, make it to match play. So it's very cool just to have an athlete who already has those goals in mind. So, you know, as coaches, makes it a little bit easier, but we still push her as hard as we can and, you know, make sure she's doing the right stuff, which she always does. But it's also something, if she does have a bad round, I can say, hey, you're WAC Freshman of the Year. You know, come on, you got this.
Yeah.
You know, we can turn it around kind of thing. So, but no, she's special. She's a fun one to coach. And, you know, she has some very high expectations this year.
That's great. That's great. Well, best of luck to you and appreciate you coming on the show this week. Thanks.
Yes, thank you so much.
It's Lauren Gasecki there. That is Talk to the Lopes for this week.